This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. And you know, you can listen to The Takeaway anytime by subscribing to our podcast. You can find that on our website, thetakeaway.org, or on iTunes. Gotta say, look like a chilly summer day in Moscow. Yep, the Obama magic seemed to run out there in Moscow. If the honeymoon is over, what does this couple look like in the long term? Resetting Obama's charisma and the U.S.-Russian relationship on The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning, everyone. I'm John Hockenberry on this Wednesday, July 8th, here with co-host Todd Zwillick. Good morning, Todd.
Hey, good morning, John.
So we've also got to look at the Michael Jackson Memorial Ceremony in L.A. yesterday. You're going to be all over that today, Todd. Yep. Some sobering statistics about jobs, programs, and mental health. And unrest in China disrupts a summit in Italy. But first, on the line with me now is former Deputy Secretary of State in the Clinton administration and president of the Brookings Institution. We're thrilled to have him on the program, Strobe Talbot. Good morning, Strobe.
Good morning, John. Nice to talk to you.
You know, it seems that yesterday's somewhat chilly meetings between the Obamas and the Russians, and you can characterize it however you like, amounted to a double reset, both of Obama's hype globally and the U.S.-Russian relationship. On the whole, are we on a new footing on both of these?
It was better than a nudge and a lot less than a breakthrough and about as good as could be expected, I think.
More on the U.S. and Russia in just a moment. Strobe Talbot is going to stay with us. But first, a rundown of what you need to know this morning. In the headlines, the president is in Italy for the G8 summit today, where world leaders will debate whether to add more stimulus money to the global economy. Meanwhile, China's president Hu Jintao had to leave the summit today to go to China in the wake of more ethnic violence in that country's northwest province. Chinese paramilitary troops and police are patrolling the streets there to stop fighting between Muslim Uyghurs and Han Chinese.
John, there are more details on the cyber attack that hit U.S. government websites over the holiday. Government officials say it knocked out websites at the Treasury Department and the Secret Service and other offices. Some were still experiencing problems as late as yesterday. There was a similar attack, by the way, in South Korea at government agencies and banks and internet sites yesterday as well. A federal bankruptcy judge has paved the way for GM to close its deal to sell most of its good assets to a government-backed company.
In record time.
One of the fastest big bankruptcies in history. The judge threw out appeals to stop the deal, which is expected to go through tomorrow. Government investigators were able to smuggle bomb-making materials into 10 federal buildings and found major security lapses, no kidding, and problems with guard training, according to a new report. The Senate Homeland Security Committee will hear those findings today. And in Latin America, mediation to solve the political crisis in Honduras is expected to start in Costa Rica tomorrow. Ousted Honduran president and the leader who succeeded him in the last week's coup have agreed to meet there for negotiations, John.
I think he's still in El Salvador at this point. Markets were down about 2% yesterday. The Dow fell to 8163, its lowest finish since April 28th. The S&P opens at 881, well below the 900 level. And oil is falling as well. The Nasdaq starts trading at 1746. Well, I learned something yesterday, Todd.
What was that?
Unlike what the song says, I learned you can say goodbye to Michael Jackson.
You can.
So I did. I'm kind of over it. It's sad, of course. We wish he was still with us, but I'm over Michael Jackson. When were you over it, folks? Give us the day. Tell us when, why. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org. When were you over Michael Jackson? Or if you're not, call us.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at KnightFoundation.org.
You're listening to The Takeaway.
Good morning, everyone. I'm John Hockenberry here with Todd Zwillick. And President Barack Obama is off in Italy now at the G8 summit, where there are other issues to deal with. But yesterday in Russia, the president stood before an audience of economic students and wanted his message to be absolutely unmistakable.
Let me be clear. America wants a strong, peaceful, and prosperous Russia. This belief is rooted in our respect for the Russian people and a shared history between our nations that goes beyond competition.
In fact, you could call the shared history between the United States and Russia more of a rivalry. What is the state of that relationship now after this very important meeting between President Barack Obama and the President of Russia and the Prime Minister of Russia, Vladimir Putin, Medvedev, of course, the president. Continuing now our discussion with Strobe Talbot, who's the president of the Brookings Institution, former deputy secretary of state in the Clinton administration, and author of, most recently, The Great Experiment, The Story of Ancient Empires, Modern States, and the Quest for a Global Nation. Strobe Talbot, you wrote a little bit about this whole idea of resetting the U.S.-Russian relationship, which was ostensibly the mission of the Obama administration. First of all, we talked a little bit about that at the top of the hour. Do you think a reset is a relevant, useful term here?
I think a lot of people are getting kind of tired of it.
Yeah.
And also, it needs to be understood correctly. Resetting a relationship is a little bit like dancing the tango. It takes two to do it. And even the headlines in our own press keep talking about this as though it's up to the United States all by itself to get things right with Russia. And there's an implication there, of course, that we all by ourselves, the U.S., got it wrong. That couldn't be further from the truth. The Russians have a lot of resetting of their own to do. It's going to take a long time to do it. It's going to be a slogging operation diplomatically, but it took a step forward this week, I think.
Although it seems to me that unlike some of the other receptions that Barack Obama has received around the world, he's not coming to two leaders who have any interest in projecting a lot of change, projecting a lot of liberalization. I mean, these are very tough, hardline Russian leaders who have an explicit agenda, and it involves territory in the Caucasus and their relationship with difficult problems in Chechnya, and they've signaled well before Barack Obama arrived that they're not moving on any of these issues.
Well, all true up to a point, John. I'd just make two points on that. First of all, I think there is still a case to be made, although it's long from proven, that there are potentially some differences between President Medvedev and Prime Minister Putin, and we can go into that if you want. But there's no question, as you suggest, that they're joined at the hip to some extent, and they're joined in a pretty tough posture. President Obama needs to be very careful, in fact, more careful than he was at the on the eve of this trip, not to appear to be trying to play the two off against each other, because that won't do Medvedev any good if he is any better than Putin over the long run. The real point here, and I think we ought to maybe just spend a second on this,
sure,
is that on the vitally important question of nuclear arms control, and there's sort of a back-to-the-future quality about that whole subject because we went through the Cold War,
sure,
during arms control with the Soviet Union, that enterprise is back on track now. And that matters. And I think the hope is, and I think I'd even make a prediction, that some progress between now and the end of the year on strategic nuclear arms control will begin to move the relationship as a whole in a somewhat more positive direction.
So the strategy here is to talk about something that we agree on or can agree on, the U.S. and Russia, and then make progress in a variety of other areas. And you've described them in some of your writing, that if we talk about everything from the Organization of Cooperation, Economic Cooperation in Europe, where Russia is an observer, you can also talk about other economic bilateral and multilateral organizations that Russia has been sort of quiet and now needs to be brought more into. There are a number of channels where this relationship can really be improved.
Right. And even on the really tough issues, and that means Iran and getting the United States and Russia more together in the Security Council to use sanctions if Iran remains on a belligerent course, which there's every reason to expect it will, that too ought to be an area where the Russians will see their interests to be pretty closely in line with the United States. The United States is they're closer to Iran than we are.
Right.
They've got a large culturally Islamic population. They don't want to see or shouldn't want to see Iran become a nuclear weapon state. But again, there is this deep, deep resentment, which you alluded to at the top of the conversation that we're having, of kind of festering resentment about the United States. The Russians have a real case of the kind of Rodney Dangerfield syndrome. They just feel they don't get enough respect, and they're going to stomp their feet and get more. That's kind of their tactic.
Well, Strobe Talbott, president of the Brookings Institution, former deputy secretary of state in the Clinton administration, we're talking about the potential change or sort of repositioning of the U.S.-Russian relationship. You mentioned Iran in a moment ago, Strobe Talbott. Listen to Barack Obama speaking about this issue of using a cooperative relationship to deliver clout in East Asia or the Middle East.
As we keep our own commitments, we must hold other nations accountable for theirs. Whether America or Russia, neither of us would benefit from a nuclear arms race in East Asia or the Middle East.
Now, Strobe Talbott, you have described Russia as being kind of encircled, both geographically and diplomatically at this point in history. Does Russia actually have legitimate clout with governments like North Korea or Iran on this issue of an arms race?
Some. The Chinese have more with regard to North Korea, but the Russians have, I think, very stupidly and short-sightedly given a lot of help to the Iranians, both in their nuclear program, ostensibly their peaceful nuclear program, but we all know it's not really peaceful, and in their ballistic missile program. But just one point on encirclement.
Sure.
That's their perception, or the perception of too many Russians. The flip side of that, the mirror image, I think the more accurate way to say it, is that they are being given a chance to kind of be part of the international community. It's really more of an opportunity for them to join international institutions and that kind of thing. And so they have to, over time, get over this historically very deep-rooted feeling they have that everybody's out to get them. And one of the problems with that attitude, which goes back to Tsarist times, is that when the Russians feel on the defensive, they tend to go on the offensive, as we saw in Georgia. And
right.
Breaking that mindset is a challenge above all for them.
Strobe Talbott, Todd Zwillick here, and I want to ask, you know, you say the Russians have a long and chronic and deep-seated sense of not getting enough respect. And just in the acute sense, since we have a new president, do you think that they see any movement on the U.S. side in the transition from the Bush administration to the Obama administration, a different attitude that makes a difference to them, or is it the same old song and dance from the United States for them?
Todd, of course, you know, there are different Russians with different perceptions. My guess is that the people who really count recognize more than they're letting on publicly that, of course, there's a difference that is potentially useful to both sides in the transition from George W. Bush to Barack Obama, not least because President Bush really didn't care that much, didn't care at all about treaty-based arms control. He was much more of a unilateralist. That means, you know, the U.S. does what it wants and the rest of the world
right.
can get used to it. President Obama is committed to diplomacy, committed to treaty-based arms control of a kind that the Russians are used to. They've gotten pretty good at, but they don't want to, you know, feign Obama mania and say, "Oh, this is terrific. Everything is now great because Obama's in the White House," because they think that would lead the United States to make excessive demands on them. So they're just playing it real cool.
And what about on the issue of missile defense, which was a major spur in under their saddle there that George W. Bush instituted unilaterally, like you said. President Obama has decided to review missile defense, not saying whether we would continue with it or discontinue it. Do you think the Russians find any solace there?
I do. I think they do. And by the way, it goes beyond the issue of the anti-missile systems that are contemplated for Poland and the Czech Republic, which was kind of a dumb idea that President Obama inherited from President Bush, but he didn't want to just give it up for nothing, as it were. They really are, that is, the United States and Russia really are, towards the end of the year, going to move towards significantly lower levels of offensive ballistic missiles and systems. That is going to require both sides to reopen the question of whether there doesn't need to be agreed treaty-based regulation of strategic defenses.
Right.
Because the lower you get on the offensive side, the more you need regulation
And that's where the whole ABM issue, the old ABM issue, comes straight out at us. We just got about 30 seconds, Strobe Talbott, before we go. Is it fair to say that the takeaway here is the big challenge going forward for the Obama administration is dealing with a very defensive Russia?
Yes, and getting them to recognize that they've got some resetting to do, including in terms of their basic mentality.
Exactly. Strobe Talbott, president of the Brookings Institution, former deputy secretary of state in the Clinton administration, author of The Great Experiment, the story of ancient empires, modern states, and the quest for a global nation. Thank you, Strobe.
Thank you.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.
You know, you can catch the show live Monday through Friday. Thanks for listening. If you have any feedback or think there's any stories we should be covering on The Takeaway, contact us at 1-877-8-MYTAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org. See ya.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.